listen, the actual apprenticeship, the standards are fit for purpose. I've been fortunate to write 5 of the logbooks. There's nothing wrong with the standards. It is the delivery. It is the delivery. So I would do my research. I would look for success rates. But what I would say is, please, please see these colleges. They would welcome a local barber going in and helping them. Right. Every college in the UK would love an Anthony to go in there and say, look, let's have a look at what you're doing. Would you like me to help you on this? Because that's kind of what I would like to see, is colleges reaching out to local employers, to fantastic barbers, and say, come on, have a look. Can you help us?
I've been chatting recently about kind of barbers making a name for themselves and that kind of celeb barber appearing. And they do seem to be involving themselves in training. There does seem to be a share in the industry.
Yeah, look, I mean, first and foremost, we need the youngsters coming in. Whether, you know, it's their time coming up. However, a lot of senior educators, proper educators, have lost a lot of work because of it. And these guys are worth listening to. Do you know what I mean? The traditional stuff is... they really are. And it's because everybody's an educator. And the product companies have got more working for peanuts. It's sad because some of the very, very good educators don't get to work. Loads of constraints with the funding for colleges. You know, I don't work within colleges. You know, I just help write with the standards. But, you know, they are up against it. And the T-levels, for me, the kiss of death for our industry.
I mean, the funding has got slashed.
Yeah. I'm an employer. If somebody was the right age, you would get £3,000 towards. And this will go out, but this is current for how we're talking today. And that's been slashed, gone.
Yeah.
It's challenging. People's rents are going up. And when we deal with all this, you know, you know, 80% of the industry is self-employed now.
Yeah,
who's going to pay for the junior? It's I've never known it this tough.
Definitely, I definitely agree. I've never known it this difficult. Find and get through, and we do an awful lot of effort in our training.
Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up, and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better.
Hi there. Welcome to another edition of the Noble Barber podcast. I'm here today with Adam Sloan to discuss, well, many things, I'm sure. But I guess your involvement with the City and Guilds is the reason that we dragged you onto our couch. But obviously, you know, you are a barber, well, almost by birth, looking at your history. So you're coming at it from a qualified hairdresser, a barber shop.
A kind of brief history of who I am and what we are. My father was a barber in Glasgow, and he worked in a place called Fusco's, which is in Cambridge Street. Amazing. I was a soap boy for him there.
Oh,
so the age of 14, excellent. I used to go and just around soaping all these guys
Beautiful.
Up. And so it's kind of growing up with it. We arrived in England. I'm a Scot. Obviously, got a bit of a dodgy accent, but I'm a Scot living in. We came to Essex to Southend-on-Sea, the longest pier in the world, longest pleasure pier in the world, and we opened up the first big yin. And big yin just means my dad was a 6'6" Glaswegian. I'm not short. I'm the runter little. My brother's bigger than me. So big yin just means big person. And I can remember if I share this with you, when we first opened up our first big yin in Southend, there was all these high rise flats. So I'm this 14-year-old lad at the time, just canvassing, you know. And I can remember getting to the 13th floor and somebody getting this thing, big yin, that's all we need, another bleeding Chinese takeover. so obviously, and we've kind of turned into a 7-figure turnover business now. So, but if it hadn't been for my father coming down, there was 3 roads in Southend, South Central, North, all one-way streets. He picks the only one that's not a bus route. And, I finished school here for 2 years. I'd come home Monday, no clients. Tuesday, no clients. And the man done all the shovel work. I mean, and I think mostly you see successful Italian restaurants. So it might be the grandfather. So I've been very, very privileged that my father done all the groundwork, and I like to think I've taken it.
There's some proper pedigree, though.
And it's it is. And my son, he's a barber. They've just won the barber shop.
Was your dad the one that taught you your barbering?
Yes.
Yeah. Trying to teach my boys to drive a car was traumatic enough.
You know what, Tony? He was brutal. You could do. And if you took the crown too short, he'd embarrass you in front. There's different teaching methods, aren't there? But my dad was brutal, and he wanted excellence. And I'd like to think that he achieved that with us. But it was certainly old school.
So how old were you when you actually kind of took over and it became you and your dad Did he have a tie?
I bought the shop off him and I was probably 30.
Okay.
And anybody that knows that works with family businesses sometimes are challenging. You might do more hours. Everybody thinks you're blessed because you're the son of. And I've got two sisters that are in the industry as well that are very successful. And as I said, my son's got a very successful barbershop in Rayleigh. I was about 30 when I remortgaged my house to buy the shop off of him. And we were very fortunate. He went from one, I hear you call them stores, one store to four. And, it's still my passion. It's still something that, as I'm getting older, you'd have thought I'd been slowing down, but I love it. And I couldn't help but overhear the previous interview you did that as you've got older, I mean, my passion's probably greater now than it ever was because I've got four kids. You do all the usual stuff when you're bringing them up. And now that, I've got three wonderful grandsons now, so I've got a lot more time for the industry. So
you made, when did you make that move? Because obviously, the City and Guilds is certainly is something you got very involved in. When did you make that move from your shops and your place and you worried about you to kind of stepping into the bigger industry?
It's interesting because, when I there was no barbering qualification when I first started. So I had to go to Hornchurch, Ardley Green Road and do my City and Guild. And back in the day, it meant something, because all my mates might have been plumbers and you'd go and have a beer and you go, I've got my City and Guild. So it really meant something and it meant something to me. So I used to drive my dad around a twist. Why do you get involved in education? And I just had this kind of yearning to progress in that. So obviously I became an assessor, and then fortunately a lady called Diane Mitchell took me under a wing at City and Guild and allowed me to start the first ever City and Guild barbering industry board. And we've been hugely successful with that. I mean, we took our brand, MH Fed, Men's Headers Federation, we took it to Japan, we took it to Mumbai with City and Guild, we took it all over Europe. So it's always been a passion of mine and and I'm not interested in anything above education. We get involved with Northern Ireland, with Scotland, with Wales and with England, with the apprenticeships and we do a photo shoot with Des Murray. We take them as a digital competition because I feel that I can help at that level. Without sounding pretentious, I feel that's the level that I'm at, because you're only as good as you've been trained, as far as I'm concerned.
So I mean, the City of Guilds has obviously been all the way around my upbringing and my industry, and we have our apprentices that we've put through, and there's an inconsistency I think with the City and Guilds delivery sometimes, and I think it'd be unfair not to talk about the failings of it. I think the successes all you got to do is Google it and it's over everything.
I make you absolutely correct, and it's a massive subject. We've got two levels to talk about, whether we want to talk about them, but I totally agree. I simplify things. It's a three-way partnership, me with you as the owner. So I'm the provider, I'm the training provider, I'm with Tony. And your apprentice, and if the three of us don't buy into that, it's not going to work. And that's the key for me. We can talk about how it's delivered and all that, but if you don't buy into me and I don't buy into you and we don't buy into to that apprentice, male or female, we're not going to have a decent, it's not going to work. And that to me is how I've...
The stores, I was always surprised by my team would come back from their college, either bigging up the fact that they were the only ones on their course getting any training in the store, that other people got all their training there. My understanding has always been that really we do a majority of the physical training in the store, and then the City and Guilds is to make sure it's up to standard and to rubber stamp and that kind of stuff.
And that's kind of what you said about a three-way partnership.
Yeah.
But, the college still have to deliver on their side of it as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're private training providers. We did have a seven-year contract dealing with an FE college, and that was challenging. That was very challenging. I can't lie about that.
But that's a big bunch of our, because that's where it's the first step a lot of people take into the kind of barbering industry.
Yep.
And last night, I was just kind of flicking through, just getting my head round. And one of the things I'd put in was, why be a barber? Yep. And there were some really nice things and some good things. And then I found it on a couple of other sites. I did it for 6 months. The course didn't deliver. And there were lots and lots of these kind of local authority courses and colleges that seem to be failing. And obviously, I'm only going to read the bad ones. The good people have got on and got on with it. But there are, and I do hear that as a complaint from other storeholders.
I mean, you know, we run an apprenticeship program, and we've got two on the current cohort of students that have done the 6 weeks, 8 week courses, and they've come to us with a certificate that these people can't do anything that they've been taught or that says that. So I echo this. I challenge this. You know,
that's what I find. We find when we look, you know, we've just this year are embarking on a kind of graduate scheme. Mm-hmm. You know, our barbers are quite small, and we'd only just opened another one before the COVID shutdown. So, you know, we're just finding our feet again on the other side, and we thought, right, we'll start a graduate program. So, someone who's finished all their college stuff and needs some polishing up and some finishing off and that kind of stuff. And I'm just gobsmacked by the people that are turning up thinking they're shop ready. Well, and some of them, the money they've spent or the time they've allocated on this, is this the issue that is running around?
Yeah,
that,
massively.
The providers
I work with a guy called Damien Owen, who's with the MH Fed, Men's Headers Federation. We're very, very fortunate there. And we've got lots and lots of members, and we're constantly getting multiple emails a day. And one of the biggest ones is these guys are leaving these courses, going into stores, and they're doing a trade test, and these guys are saying, you can't cut hair. Mm. This isn't them being derogative to the individual. Mm. You can't. I mean, it's very difficult. That's why, you know, I believe that it has to be done over a 12-month period minimum. And the short courses should be called an introduction to barbering. They shouldn't be a fully qualified barber. And I think that's something that needs to be sorted out. Mm. Anybody, and let's face it, we're in a... I mean, my father used to, it's a Glaswegian, there's a cartoon character called Earl Wally, and it's a guy with hair that grows out of every single curly hair. And my father used to say, when you can do hair with so many different factors, an Earl Wally head, you can cut hair. Because you will go to a short course, and you might only do 10 haircuts in that course of that time, and you're not dealing with different textures, are you? You know, you're not dealing with influencing factors like Kaz Licks, you know, Nate Wells, you know. So there's many, many things. So I think it's an introduction to barbering. I mean, we shouldn't be saying that guy's qualified. And that needs to be looked at.
I mean, there are some courses that I think run through the numbers that you'll be doing five, six different haircuts a day over a kind of 10, 12-week period, you know, which are probably in the, you know, the amount of numbers you've gone through have helped.
Yep.
But there's, and then... As long as you're leaving that knowing that you then need more work to be shop ready. I think these guys are paying these money, or they're spending their time at education colleges, and they're coming out really believing they're ready. And then we're the ones as store owners that are kind of waving this stick, say, nah.
Well, do you not think there's many factors? I think the elephant in the room is... you know, it's really difficult for barbers to take on apprentices because of the financial situation. Mm. And that would probably, the apprenticeship route for me is the best route to getting somebody industry ready. We've got T-levels coming up. I'm not a fan. I don't want to admit.
You think it's going to bring anything to the party? Do you see the reasoning behind it?
They are meant to engage with barbershops, with salons for hair, and they're meant to do, I think it's 40 days during a period of time. Historically, I don't think that they are hugely successful. Just if we look at the success rate of them that get into the industry, and that's not me, because listen, colleges are tough. You know, you've got Ofsted. You know, we've just recently had a very good Ofsted, but you've got Ofsted, and tutors are forever having their time scale, condensed, and so much paperwork involved. Mm-hmm. And the thing that suffers is the practical side of it. So, you know, it's if people were to go in and understand how difficult it is for an FE college to deliver it, because at the end of the day, they want results. Mm. And, you know, whoever's designing this really needs to look, we need more practical skills. It's a practical industry. So it's a practical vocation. So it's quite tough for them, you know, to be fair. We work with lots of colleges. You know, we've recently done a show up at East Durham College, and we like to work closely with colleges. And it's challenging for these people because, you know, the budgets are cut. et cetera, et cetera. I'm not making excuses. I'm just giving a roundy viewpoint on the outside of it,
and I listen to I meet these guys who are coming out really thinking that they're ready, or that they've done their college, or worse, that they're starting a barbering course at a local authority college, and then getting so demoralised that they've gone, and our industry suffers for it. But we've always fought against kind of regulation, regulating. We've fought against licensing. Where do you sit on there actually being a proper license to trade as a barber?
In an ideal world, that would be fantastic.
And why do you think it's not happened?
Why do I think it's not happened?
Yeah, why are we not operating?
If I'm not mistaken, I think in 1962, 63, it was offered to the Hair and Barber Council then. Okay. Did you want mandatory or non? And they went for non. And I think ever since then, it's very difficult to go up to a minister and tell them that we should be regulated when they're saying nobody's dying. I've recently resigned from the Hair and Barber Council, not political, no reason for political. I'm just education. I don't want to get involved in the politics. So I've kind of recently literally resigned from it because I really want to channel my efforts into the education and our company.
So not getting to before we just move off of that, you on the whole would be you, but my understanding would always be that if you're running apprenticeships, proper apprenticeships, to finish with a license would be the way to be
100%.
Owning the whole thing properly.
Yes. And we've got quite a few thousand members. And I get inundated with members saying that we need license because it's stopping this shop popping up. That, Damien, a very good friend of mine, the one I was telling you about, is a barber's. He's recently done on a social media. He went out there and he got about 1,800 views straight away. And there was about 80 barbers, what I call traditional barbers, old school barbers, moaning about the standards and moaning about the... we can't afford to survive. There's 8 barber shops opening up in my town. There's 6 in this town and that town. So regulation would stop that because we would turn around to these guys, whoever's opening and saying, are you qualified? Can you show us your certificates that you've... Because let's face it, if I turn... I still do 40 hours a week behind a chair. And every client that comes in our shop just assumes that we are regulated.
Yeah.
And assumes that we're all qualified. Mm. So it's a difficult... No, it's a difficult
it's a frustration. I must admit, my whole career, I've been a big fan of legislation and licensing. And I don't think it necessarily is to shut people down or keep people out of the industry. I think it encourages them to want that and get there.
Listen, Tony. I've sat on lots of APPGs at the Commons, and they work tirelessly. The Hair and Barber Council, as do the other bodies. I belong to a personal care body at the minute with 5 of the top. Bodies, if you like, and we are campaigning for various things, even playing field with VAT, for example.
Yep.
So it's, all these people have all got the right intentions. It's just convincing the government that it's important because as far as I've had many a conversation and they go, well, who's dying? Why should we? And somebody like my father, he was never qualified, but there is grandfather rights. So anybody that's not qualified, you can get grandfather rights. It's a tough gig. It's a tough gig for them. And I think their intentions are all correct.
Okay. Get you back to education.
Yeah.
So, I think the exciting thing that I've certainly seen in the last kind of 10 years of barbering is there is a real urge to learn. There definitely does. The downside is it's a very crowded forest that you don't quite know, what you're getting, and this is the problem. And I think, how do you find the proper courses? How do you stress test whether you're going on a good course or not?
Without plugging myself,
in general,
Of course there is. Listen. The actual apprenticeship, the standards are fit for purpose. I've been fortunate to write 5 of the logbooks. I've been very fortunate to work closely with C&G and the barbering. And in 1999, my company was called Big In Academy, and we delivered 25% of the country's qualification in 1999 when it first came out at World Skills, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been involved in the writing of stuff, exams, everything from day one. I've been lucky enough to be an author for them. There's nothing wrong with the standards. It is the delivery. Mm. It is the delivery. So, I mean, how would I? I would do my research. I would look for success rates.
Yeah.
Do you know, I'm always going through social media. And as I said to you earlier, and I hate social media, but I'm drawn to it.
Yeah.
It's like a drug.
I think everyone would agree, honestly, it
does my head in. But I have to answer, you know, probably 100 inboxes a day. That is one of the biggest things is, but what I would say is please see these colleges. They would welcome a local barber going in and helping them. Right. Every college in the UK would love an Anthony to go in there and say, look, let's have a look at what you're doing. Would you like me to help you on this? Because that's kind of what I would like to see is colleges reaching out to local employers, to fantastic barbers and say, come on, have a look. You know, can you help us? Mm. You know, so for me, that's always been my message. You know, when anybody contacts me, I'll say, just go to your local college, offer your services, they'll have your hand off. Right. They'd love to work with you. So that's kind of where I am with it. We're just writing new stuff at the minute. Me and two of the guys that are working for me, we're putting more meat on the bone. But it is the delivery. Mm. It is the delivery.
I mean, but you are running shorter courses. So these are improver courses and...
We only run apprenticeships. That's all we run, right? So we run the full... I work with Menspire on it.
Yeah.
And I can tell you right now, and this is a fact, every single person on the Menspire course gets a job. Hmm. So that's a 12-week course. And it's an introduction.
This is what I was reading about, yeah.
This is an introduction into it. There's none of this that we're saying you on there. Yeah. That's an introduction.
So what is that 12-week course? What does it deliver?
So we will facilitate the an NVQ, old standards, not new standards. Mm-hmm. And we will deliver everything on that course in a 12-week on a 12-week period. But everybody on that, they are getting a foundation into barbering. We're not saying you're a qualified barber. Mm-hmm. That's down to Menspire.
But everyone starting this 12-week course isn't a barber, isn't an existing barber.
I would say that it's 50-50. You've got a lot of hairdressers that are coming into barbering. So yep. I would say that they've got a lot of, whenever our team go in there, because we work on a weekly basis with Menspire, and I would say that we've got a high percentage of hairdressers because whenever we're going in looking at what they've got, they've all got a sitting guild in hair. So he gets a lot of foreign students, which is not for qualifications.
Yeah.
The guy, yeah, he's turning the messiah of the industry. He's a section king, isn't he? So he's got them coming in from all over Italy, Spain and all that because they like the Joshy's kind of transition from hairdressing into barbering. Mm. So... And that's the only course we work with. You know,
So they'd come out of that 12-week course and then go on to carry on with their training?
Yes. Right. They would go into a store.
And they work. Know that when they start.
Absolutely. You know, there's no way that we can say you are now qualified and you are fit for public. They're the only people that we work with at the minute. Mm. At the minute, that's the only people we work with. And it's the only City and Guild course. I think it's the only City and Guild course that City and Guild will put their name to.
Yeah.
As an introductory course.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's always this idea of the more you're paying, that if you're paying for the course, you value it more.
Well,
you know, and I think our industry, I'm certainly seeing more people coming in who are on their second or third career. So they've been something else, particularly been in the services, come out of that. I'm hoping to get a guy on the couch here soon who was an international footballer who's become a barber. So, you know, there are second and third careers.
Well, in Rayleigh, we've got a couple of people that are on the 12-month course and they are making the hours up privately. Mm. And so we find that people that are putting their hard-earned cash into it are really serious about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you take Menspire, for example. These people are staying in hotels, Nick, so this is costing them an absolute fortune. So we find that with their revision, we give them study packs for their exams. And we find that their success rate is up at close on the 100%. Whereas sometimes if you've got an apprentice that's coming to you And they've got that safety net of their shop.
Yeah.
But we find that people that are paying their hard-earned cash work very, very hard to try and
succeed. I must admit, I'm seeing more. The really interesting people I have been meeting are the guys that have been spending out, have been doing these. I think normally that kind of, you know, a lot of them have been paying out for a kind of 3 or 4 month course. They've done a lot of the numbers. But they're a bit more open about looking to improve rather than expecting to be done. I think the ones that turn up and thinking they're done have done a 18-month, 2-year local authority course.
I mean, it's a tough gig. It's a tough gig. Do your research, right? Do your research. There's some colleges. There's a lot of colleges that are doing great stuff. And the flip side of this is, we have barbers phoning us up every week. Have you got somebody trained? Have you got somebody trained? I'm ready to take them on. Who have you got? And we flatly turn them down because I said, well, that guy is coming from that store, and we've had a 15-year relationship, and we do our apprentices. So we're finding a lot of people want to nick them, but don't want to spend the time investing in them. So that's another thing.
Was the next bit I wanted to speak to you about, in the fact that. As a store, it's quite a lot of work to have apprentices. A store, it takes up time. You know, the staff that are doing it have to have their kind of column cut so that they can support. You know, it's an expense to the company. Are a lot of people that are, a lot of these barbershops that are complaining not putting the work in?
In what way?
In doing the training themselves and supporting it.
100%, without a doubt. You know, without a doubt, we have regular
meetings. They're wanting them to wander in, stand behind a chair and start cutting.
We don't work with anybody like that, to be honest, because we're quite fortunate. We work with groups of 12, and like I started off by saying this, if there's no three-way thing, you know, I'm not doing him any good, I'm not doing you any good, and you're going to give me a bad statistic. So, you know, we've worked with groups, we've worked with stores like that over the years, but not.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly kind of hairdressing wise, and you know, the hair salon industry, which I guess has had its apprenticeship, has always run more consistently.
We do hairdressing apprentice qualifications. But we found
there certainly are those, annoyingly, probably it was some of the groups, but those salons that just didn't do the training. They would just hoover up people, take them on there,
cheap labor for years, wasn't it? You know, running. Yeah. I mean, you know, I could sit and have a laugh with you and tell you many, many stories, but you're absolutely correct. It's, I've been lucky enough to teach all over the UK and to go to colleges everywhere. And, you know, look no further than the educators. Look no further than, you know, people that are passionate about the job. As I said earlier, loads of constraints with the funding for colleges. You know, I don't work within colleges. You know, I just help write with the standards, but, you know, they are up against it. And the T-levels, for me, are going to be a kiss of death for our industry.
I mean, the funding has got slashed.
Yeah. I'm an employer. We would get, if somebody was the right age, you would get £3,000 towards, you know, this will go out, but this is current for how we're talking today. And that's been slashed, gone.
Yeah.
It's challenging. People's rents are going up. And we deal with all this, you know, 80% of the industry is self-employed now.
Yeah,
who's going to pay for the junior? It's you know, I've never known it this tough.
Definitely, I definitely agree. I've never known it this difficult. Find and get through, and we do an awful lot of effort in our training.
Well, we've recently, through the company we work alongside, we've recently had a very, very good Ofsted, and the numbers, and I can tell you the numbers. Last August we had about 250 apprentices start. This August there was 47. We're living in an age where my grandsons want to be influencers, you know, so it's difficult and you know, it's not great pay, is it? So, you know, our industry is really having a tough time at the minute, and it's...
But surely the way to that is to kind of, is to dust off, stand up and start embracing your training and encouraging it.
Interestingly enough, barbering is on the up. You know, our barbering academy is, you know, we're oversubscribed. So, you know, we're kind of cool with that. But
and how are you feeling about this influx of online training that appeared during COVID? And some of them have stayed.
Well, I mean, it's quite simple. You know, we've got online work, Like we've got online downloadable stuff for our shoes. But I'll just sum up one. You know, you are that guy working indoors. You and I know, and we're going, you're standing in the wrong position. So it's a great resource if somebody's with you.
Yeah.
So I'm you know, you can't learn. In saying that, we're living in the days where all these youngsters are learning from YouTube.
Oh, no, we've had people turn up for a job who've just been teaching themselves from YouTube.
Yeah, so it's...
But there's also been a big explosion of barbers teaching. There does seem to be a huge amount of barbers. You know, I met Phil Jarman the other week, who set up his academy.
He's about 6'6",
I think he called himself a big Scotsman. But, you know, he set up his academy and he's very clear about what his is delivering.
Yes.
And there does seem to be more and more. And there seems to be, you know, I've been chatting recently about kind of barbers making a name for themselves and that kind of celeb barber appearing. And they do seem to be involving themselves in training. There does seem to be a share in the industry.
Yeah, look, I mean, first and foremost, we need the youngsters coming in. Whether, you know, it's their time coming up. However, a lot of senior educators... proper educators have lost a lot of work because of it, and these guys are worth listening to. Do you know what I mean? The traditional stuff is, they really are, and it's because everybody's an educator, and the product companies have got more working for peanuts, everybody's a star, aren't they? They've all got the Insta accounts and blah blah blah, and it's sad because some of the very very good educators. Don't get to work. Mm. We're an Insta fame, aren't we? We're against social media versus reality.
Yeah, that is definitely seems to be. I hadn't thought of it that way around. I definitely seem to see an awful lot of people branching into education. And to be fair, more and more kind of admitting that they're not really making any money out of it.
Yeah.
I think there was an idea it was a way to make a fortune. And I think there's some of the schools seem to do well.
I mean, it just, it is about the youth. You know, my son's got an amazing place, 88 Love to Create in Rayleigh. They've just won the Wild Barbershop of the Year.
Excellent.
But when I, we work close, we've got 10 barbers working for him. It's like, he's got full-time receptions. He's got the coffee shop, the bar and all that nonsense. But my father was doing a skin fade with a pair of Forfex and it was the most beautiful blend 40, 50 years ago. Mm. And things get reinvented, don't they? And, you know, so it's maybe it just needs a little reality check, a shake up. But certainly, you know, they're the stars of tomorrow, aren't they? So, again, I tend to work closely with them. We had the young feds with Josh LaMonica, Danny Robinson, Tarek Howes.
Yeah, talk about them young feds. How is that? How are you finding the guys that are getting involved in that?
Well, they've all gone. I mean, first of all,
this has been running for a while.
Yeah, well, what it was is... I felt that certainly with the fellowship and hairdressers, this is my opinion, years ago, I mean, I was, obviously I'm a hairdresser as well, I've had 60 finalists in the Colour Trophy, regional winners and blah, blah, blah. So I've done all that in the past. And I looked at the barbering world and for me then, it was kind of looked down on by a lot of hairdressers in my opinion. So I decided that we'd start the Young Feds and we got these four guys. Josh had never really done anything, Danny, Tarek, Simon Kibler, my son Joe Sloan, Joey. There's some very, very talented kids. And we put them on stage and we'd done a show, we'd done a presentation at the Weller Studios for the fellowship. And me and my son Joe were going up to do a gig in Wakefield the following day. So I'm driving out of Wakefield and Anne Herman, who's legendary from the fellowship, Anne rung me and she said, Adam, that is the best score that anybody's ever had, these young guys on stage. So that was the birth of it. And of course, we then...
But how long ago was that?
6-7 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we stopped doing education, Tony, because I felt that, you know, at the time, where I'd like to think that these guys have gone on to influence a lot of young people. And then all of a sudden, their careers have blossomed.
Mm.
They've blossomed. And I was going to start another Young Fed side, but I never try and do the same thing twice. But... what we got from that, and I did a podcast with Chris Foster, and Chris was saying at the time his opinion that we changed the industry, we changed the face of how barbering was perceived because it is a skill. It's a fantastic skill.
Yeah.
You know, short hair, it's massive. And once we'd achieved that, I had to work out where we wanted to go with it. Do we just keep doing shows? Because, You know, MH Fed, we've done in excess of £500,000.
Wow.
Yeah, we've done five shows a year. My first one was 56 grand, which we did at Pro Air Live. And then once we got the brand off the ground, we just started, you know, we started selling clippers. And I think I pissed off a load of people by doing that. And we started selling stuff. And I thought, right, I'm not an electrical company. I'm not a wholesaler. Yeah. And that's when you've got to pitch your flag somewhere, and we've gone education. And that's where we are. But I still work closely with all these guys, and they've gone out and they're amazing.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, looking through it, it's a.
So I'd like to think that and that was born out of people, I feel, a lot of hairdressers didn't respect barbers. Mm. And look what's happened. Look what's happened to the industry.
No, I mean, in fact, you've gone the other way around. I mean, when I talk to hairdressers, the one thing that resoundingly comes up is, if you could find a good short hair course.
Yeah.
And hairdressers have, you know, there's a whole generation of hairdressers that don't know how to cut short hair.
Absolutely. You know, well, especially nowadays with balayage and long hair. I mean, there's a lot of hairdressers.
It's
picking up on what you said earlier, because we've got the Hair Federation as well, we have just worked on a fresh on the floor thing. So when people finish their sitting guild in hair, same gig, don't feel confident. So we've got a program called Fresh on the Floor, and that's what we're doing with Barbara in a minute. We're trying to get that program when you leave, when you're finished. I can remember, you know, I got my sitting guild. So on the Friday, I'm cutting hair. On the Monday, I got my sitting guild. I thought, nothing's really changed. I'm still the same. You know, so it's like learning to drive, isn't it? Yeah. You've got to kind of perfect your skills. And how I did it back in the day is I went on every course I could find, you know, because I always say, probably like yourself and me, we've got an imaginary bag of knowledge there. So whenever we were teaching up at the K8 Salon Group, which is Sassoon Group Sassoon trained up Nottingham Derby. And we're doing a barbering course, and none of them used clippers, and they gave us such a hard time. So I then worked with a guy called Stacey Brown, who was the global director for Sassoons for a year. I learned their techniques. And then when I went back to them, I said, I understand your techniques, but that's not what we're learning today. We're using clippers. So it's been able to, and again, you know, getting back to educators, I always say this, that I've done a lot of stage work, and when are you doing stage work or teaching? If you're there to teach A, B, C, don't teach D, E, and F.
Yeah.
Don't overload it, because that's bad teaching as far as I'm concerned. So our programs are, I work on this? Yes, because we're not there yet. You know?
What's the length of that course?
Well, it's an apprenticeship. It's the apprenticeship course that we do. So, you know, it's 18 months. Yeah. A lot of them are finished 13, 14. It depends on how good they are, to be honest. I mean, our private courses, we do every year. And quite often they'll do 15, 16 months. Because it's no skin off my nose to have them there for another two, three months. If they don't feel they're ready, I've failed.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's it. It's down to whoever's delivering the courses, Tony. But I really stress to any educator out there, if you're delivering ABC, don't do any more, because you're failing. And that's sometimes you see too many tricks and you're thinking, you won't take it in. Mm. So that's something I'm pretty strong on, you know. Mm. I was guilty of that back in the day when I was doing stage work. I was like pulling rabbits out and I'd come off the stage and I'd be knackered.
You can get a bit over it. You know, it does feel like there's a lot to share sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, that structure, and I think, you know, that's the one thing that I feel we've managed to get in our firm, is a structure so everyone can see where they're going. And I think if you don't have that clear plan for your training, for your growth, or whatever you're doing, you're going to get lost.
I mean, I developed a thing called this means an acronym, MENS, and I would be walking up to within our shops. And I'd be watching the chat, the fact that gentleman would have his legs crossed, or he'd be slouching in the chair, and I would just go, have you checked your mens? And that stylist, the barber, will know that. I mean, check your mirrors, check the ears, right? Check the neckline and check symmetry, the burns or whatever.
Yeah.
And straight away, they'll look at me and they'll know that I've clocked that person,
the deportment's wrong
or whatever. So I still think it's really important every day, every haircut, to make sure that, because sometimes all my clients are my friends.
And then again,
you're showing them a mirror. I once put a picture of John Travolta on the back of one, and the guy went, "Yeah, it's great." He hadn't even looked. So I think it's important to keep your standards there.
And so you're still doing 40 hours behind the chair.
Yes,
and presumably busy.
How are you?
Where do you find the time, mate?
I mean, it's first of all,
because that does take some energy.
I love it. It's, I mean, I could be digging holes. Mm. I mean, you know, cutting hair and talking shite for a living ain't too bad, really. So I love it. I love my job, and I'm very fortunate. You know, anybody that knows me, staff, and I haven't taken a new client on for 10 years. So I've been very, very fortunate to, you know, that I can look after to the clientele, and I'm very, very, very fortunate. And I still do 2 days within the college. I still do that. So it's my hobby. I mean, I drive my wife around a twist. You know, so it's something that I'm very, very passionate about, you know?
Fantastic. Well, mate, I'm so pleased you came and spoke to us. It's been, you've been on my target since we started this. And I find the City and Guilds an enthralling kind of centre point. And I do think, I think it's been really interesting that as an industry, us barbers need to take a bit of responsibility ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of encouraging as many people as possible to start inundating their local colleges with a bit of support. But, mate, thank you so much for your time.
I really appreciate it.
I hope we'll cross paths again many more times. And
We're both Rangers fans, aren't we? Different Rangers.
We're different Rangers, definitely. Well done. Thank you very much, mate.
My pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.